Hi, this is Daniel Garber of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. You probably heard of Cleopatra. She was a beautiful and sensual temptress who seduced two Roman leaders before tragically killing herself in a fit of passion with an asp to her breast. Or was she a brilliant leader, a skilled tactician, a multilingual scholar, and the most powerful woman of her era? What is the truth, and what are the myths about this Ptolemaic pharaoh, and how can we tell the difference in our search for the real Cleopatra? Searching for Cleopatra is a new documentary about this Egyptian titan. It talks to historians and scholars and captures recent archaeological finds that cast new light on her story. It's directed by Susan Teske, known for her work as a producer for The Fifth Estate. Searching for Cleopatra premieres on The Nature of Things on January 6th on CBC and CBC Gem. The Nature of Things is celebrating its 60th season and has been hosted by noted environmentalist and geneticist David Suzuki since 1979. So I'm very pleased and honored to have here, digitally via Zoom, Susan Teske in Toronto and David Suzuki in Vancouver to tell us more about Cleopatra. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming. Okay, so Susan, Cleopatra has been a famous persona, both as a character and as a historical figure, for 2,000 years. Why is her story so enduring?
Well, I think for a couple of reasons, one good and one bad, probably. I mean, she's enduring because she was such an extraordinary character. She was very powerful. She was the most powerful woman of her time, and indeed, I think probably the most powerful woman until just recently, when you've had some Western and Indian leaders. But that's the good reason. The bad reason is that she became this, courtesy of the guys who got to write the history, the Romans, she became this kind of iconic siren, temptress, bad girl who, you know, bewitched a man and made them, you know, bend to her will and all of that. So this got taken up, of course, by, you know, irresistibly by man after man, writers, painters, and of course Hollywood, and who really went to town. And so she's been seared into the consciousness as this pop icon, and she is still irresistible, but for all the wrong reasons now, I think.
So what are the myths about her that you try to clear up in your documentary?
Well, the documentary really is kind of two parts in a sense to it. Both of them are searching for Cleopatra. One is, and I'm sure David will talk about this, I mean, part of it is the archaeological dig, the science, where her tomb has never been found. And of course, this is one of the reasons for this mystery. She's a mystery story, which is another reason she endures. And so there's an archaeologist who has been on a dig for 14 years, who is searching for her tomb, and looks like she might be getting close. But so that's part of the search for her. The other part is stripping away this, who was she really? And one of the big myths was that she was a beautiful woman.
That's so interesting, because one of the things the archaeologist found was a coin with her face on it. Could you describe that? Could you talk about that?
Well, I mean, coins, they found actually about a couple of hundred coins. And coins are one of the most reliable indicators of what people looked like, because as a queen, just as still to this day, she would have her face imprinted, her profile imprinted on coins. So they are the most reliable indicator of what she might have looked like. And it does not look like Liz Taylor. No, sorry. And that's all I'm going to tell you. You have to watch the film to find out what she really looked like.
Okay. So, as you said, a lot of what we know about Cleopatra came from Greek and Roman sources, like Plutarch. And the Ptolemies were a Hellenic dynasty. and Alexandria, where she lived, was this great city in the Middle East in Egypt. But she was also, in many ways, Egyptian, not just Hellenic. She spoke the local language. She presented herself as the goddess Isis. Can you talk about the Egyptian aspects of Cleopatra?
Well, I mean, the Ptolemies, which were originally Macedonian, had ruled Egypt for decades, centuries at that point. I mean, she wasn't kind of just come on the boat from Greece. So they had been part of Egypt and had been the pharaohs for quite some time. She's actually the last pharaoh of Egypt. She is the last queen. After that, they become essentially a province of Rome. So she was very Egyptian, and she did see herself as the goddess Isis. Of course, pharaohs were seen as living gods, and she was very much a part of that. She built Alexandria. She and her ancestors had built Alexandria into an incredible place. I mean, it really is interesting because it really made Rome, although Rome had the big empire, it made the city of Rome look like, you know, a backwater. Alexandria was beautiful. It was very much actually like the Rome, what we come to associate now with Rome. Because in some ways, both Julius and Octavian modeled their changes to Rome on Alexandria. And Alexandria had this extraordinary library, which was really started by her father, who wanted to have every single book in the world in that library. So an extraordinary place.
Now, Cleopatra was famous for her entrances and exits. Like, we all know about her. I mean, maybe she didn't use an ass, but she killed herself in a dramatic way. But talk about the entrance she made on her royal barge.
Well, she was a woman who knew how to make an entrance. There's no question. The first famous entrance, which was actually calculated, but not as much as the second one. The first one, when she meets Julius Caesar, which is, you know, she is a young woman. She's 21 and she's fighting for her throne with her brother slash husband. That's another story. And she has to get past his troops to get to Caesar, because she knows if she can get to Caesar, she's got a chance to save her life and her throne. And she goes on this incredibly circuitous route up, you know, down the Nile and back up again, and is smuggled into the palace to Caesar in not anything as glamorous as a Persian rug, but a burlap sack, probably. And there she is. And, you know, Caesar, who was a very charismatic, smart guy, I think when he sees this young woman in front of him, realizes that this is a girl with moxie, they would say, right? I mean, here she is. She's done something incredibly resourceful and courageous to get to him. So that's her first entrance, and it pays off, of course. She does save her life. She gets the throne, and they also have a child. But, you know, anyway.
I'm sure something happened in between those two events. No.
We don't have to talk about that. But the second entrance, after Caesar's assassinated, you know, I think that the story about Cleopatra really has to be understood in her trying to maintain not only her throne, but her country and her empires, because she had an empire, their independence from Rome, which was very difficult to do. I mean, the Roman Empire was expanding like crazy. Very few people managed to maintain any level of independence. And she does this for over 20 years until she commits suicide. And so when Caesar is killed, she then has to, you know, figure out strategically what she does next. And she has a choice between the two heir apparents, Octavian and Mark Antony. She chooses Mark Antony, and in a way he chooses her. He summons her to come and see him. But she does it her own way. She's, you know, not going to kind of come running cap in hand. She is a queen. She is a living god. And if she's going to go somewhere, she's going to pick her time and her place and her method of entrance. And it is calculated to absolutely not just impress Antony, you know, sexually, I suppose, but to really say, here is who I am. I am a queen. I am just as powerful as you. I have more money than you do, that's for sure. and you know, again, it works. I mean, he's blown away. And they form an alliance, which is actually not just a romantic alliance, although it is that, but it's an alliance that seeks to expand their joint empires to the east. And they're very successful at that. So again, she's an extraordinarily shrewd and resourceful leader.
So you made this movie, and in fact, all of The Nature of Things is being made during a pandemic. David, can you talk about what changes, what special things you had to do to continue making the show during a pandemic? What allowances have you had to make?
It had nothing to do with making the show, only the narration in the end. That was Susan's challenge, it seems to me. I have to ask, Susan, that extraordinary moment when one of your lead characters was breaking through it, into a tomb that had never been opened. How the hell did you get that? Like, did she tell you, I'm about to do this, and you could line up your...
I think everybody knew exactly, you know. I mean, in fact, that particular tomb, there's a funny way things work in, well, not a funny way, but, you know, as you probably know, David, I mean, with archaeology, you can't just bang in and start, you know, okay, let's open this up, right? It's all done with, and especially in Egypt, where the government has very tight control on the digs for good reason, and so there are permits, there are digging seasons. It's almost like climbing Everest, right? You've got a window when you can dig. And so they had a very good, the previous season, if you can imagine, they had a very good idea that there was something down there. So it wasn't like, oh, we just fell upon this. They knew that there was something there. They hadn't opened it. So that's a surprise when it's opened and there are the two mummies. But certainly they, you know, they had a pretty good idea. There was something there that was very promising, because you don't find sealed tombs, you know, very often.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very unusual, and it's very exciting, right? I mean, it's staggering, because there's so, I mean, 14 years they've been taking patience.
She's not trained as an archaeologist or anything.
No, she isn't, although she was a criminal lawyer. I mean, Martinez is quite a character, right? She was a criminal lawyer. That was, as we said, her parents' choice. But she was another one of these people who, you know, I don't know whether she saw a movie but read about Cleopatra when she was a teenager or early 20s, and she just fell in love with her. I mean, she just thought, what an incredible person. And so then she thought, I'm going to be an archaeologist. And I mean, she has some training. I mean, it's not like she's just, you know, and that has been, she wants to find, you know, the tomb of Cleopatra. The other nice thing about that is that nobody knows where Mark Antony is. Mm-hmm. And of course, he killed himself, you know, around at the same, he killed himself first and then she did. Nobody knows what happened to either one of them. So of course, the question is, are they together? Even in death, are they together?
A bit of mystery.
Lots of mysteries about Cleopatra. Lots of mysteries. But they're getting closer and closer.
Well, to me, the fascinating thing is, you know, 2,000 years ago is a long time ago. And how you can kind of draw the pieces about someone who was so remarkable. You know, Daniel, did you know she spoke how many languages? Eight languages or something?
Only after I saw the documentary.
Yeah, an amazing woman, but still a mystery. I mean, I prefer to think of her as as Elizabeth Taylor, of course.
David?
who is it? Was it Theda Bara, or who is the original?
Oh, the silent screen
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Yes. And Claudette Colbert.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Who is very clever.
Yes.
So I guess we're awaiting Kim Kardashian or someone.
Well, there was this rumor that it was going to be Angelina Jolie. Although I think she might be getting a little old for the part. But hey.
A remarkable, remarkable woman and a remarkable story.
Very much so. Finally.
You know, but you know, one of the reasons I think it's so modern now, her story. I mean, you say 72,000, why should we care? In fact, her story is so much reflects not just the idea that the winners get to write history, and the winners being men get to write history, so women get shoved to one side, which is of course something that people are very concerned about now, but it's also this kind of idea of fake news, right? That she's painted this certain way as this kind of sexy, scheming seductress, you know, and that's all that we see of her. So it's, I think, very current, the idea of who really was this woman and how she's been portrayed.
Thank you very much for telling me about all about this. Susan Teske's documentary Searching for Cleopatra premieres on January 8th on David Suzuki's The Nature of Things on CBC and CBC Gem. This is Daniel Garber, the movies, each Friday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.